What it is, Brad Lee back again with another episode of Dropping Bombs. Today in the studio, folks, I got a treat for you. Jerry Acuff back in the house. What's up, Jerry?
Oh, great to be here, Brad. It's been too long since I saw you.
Folks, you guys don't, if you don't know Jerry Acuff, dude, he's in one of the world's top sales trainers on planet Earth and has been for quite some time, mainly focused in the pharmaceutical world, but, you know, been outside the pharmaceutical world as well. Best-selling author. All around good dude. Podcast The Jerry Acuff Show. And shit, you've been doing this since I was shitting in diapers.
Well, are you trying to say I'm old?
Well, you've been doing it a long time.
I have been doing it a long time. Yeah, I started a company 24 years ago, and we've been doing great. And so,
Jerry Acuff, acuff.com. If you want to find him, you can also find him on social media at jerry.acuff. Mm-hmm. Jerry Acuff was taken.
I don't handle that kind of stuff, Brad.
So he just did the old dot. Okay, well, again, Jerry.Acuff, you guys want to follow him on social media. He's also got a couple of books, The Relationship Edge. In Business. Stop Acting Like a Seller and Start Thinking Like a Buyer.
Right. And I got my new book is called The New Model of Selling that I actually wrote with Jeremy Miner.
Oh, Jeremy.
Yeah.
He's getting quite popular as well, isn't he?
Oh, he's been quite popular.
We were bringing him to a thing we were doing once, the sales thing I was doing, and he ended up not being able to come, and someone called, and they said, well, Jeremy Miner's not coming, and I said, well, that's just a minor issue. That's a minor problem. But anyway, folks, now you guys know who he is. A lot of you guys already did. He's been on Dropping Bombs before. He's a sales expert. We talk about sales. This time, I want to talk about your 8-week program for business owners and sales leaders.
Right.
Because you're, for some reason, getting all excited about teaching people how to coach and lead sales teams.
Yeah, you know, I've been thinking a lot about this, Brad. I mean, we do a lot of coaching in our business. But I've been thinking about a lot of people that we talk to that actually own companies or they're, you know, CEOs of companies. And they don't have any sales experience. They could be an engineer, they could be a doctor, they could be a dentist, they could be whatever. But they don't have any experience in teaching people how do you sell. And oftentimes they'll hire somebody that they think knows what they're doing.
Like you.
Well, they usually don't hire us until somebody's screwing it up for their own company. They're not making their quotas. They're wondering why their business isn't growing. And they don't know what to do about it because they don't know anything about sales. So I do know a lot about sales. I know a heck of a lot about how do you coach salespeople? How do you get salespeople to model the behavior? And what are the key things that you have to do in order to become, to go from good to great as a sales leader? My bias is, as an owner of a company, if I could find somebody that could actually help me get somebody upskilled so that they could actually make quota for me and take that barrier, I mean, that bothersome, you know, idea that what the hell am I going to do because my sales leader is not doing their job, then all they got to do is hire me and we'll put them through 8 weeks of training. And at the end of that, I promise you they'll be a hell of a lot better than they were when they started.
Why 8 weeks?
Well, a good friend of mine used to say this all the time. Training isn't something that you did. It's something you do.
That's right.
And so the reason I do 8 things is because I think there's 8 critical things that they really need to master. And so what we do is we'll put them through the 8 weeks. But after each week, we have a 90-minute session so that they can ask any questions that they want of me. And then they have access to my email and my text messages. And so I'm always there to help them coach when they're having issues and challenges. And, you know, I tell people a lot of times, there's a lot of things that I do. One thing is I'm not a lawyer. So if you call me and ask me to help you, I will say yes, if I know you or if somebody that I know knows you, because I have found that the laws of the universe say when you give, you get. And so I get business that way. Sometimes I don't get business that way, but I'm not looking for business. What I'm looking for is how can I help somebody be effective? And so I'm not going to lose these people after 8 weeks. I'll always be there to help them. And it's just something that I get excitement doing.
Now, this isn't a video. This is not a video course. This is a live course.
Well, no, it's actually a video course, and the live part are the questions and answers and so you, stuff like
so,
that.
So they go through some curriculum and they jump on a call with you?
Yep.
Is there any in person?
No.
What if they live in your town?
If they live in my town, they can come to my house.
Dang. What town?
You would not know. Rockbridge Baths, Virginia.
Rockbridge Baths?
Bath, B-A-T-H-S.
Oh, Rockbridge Baths.
Yep.
Why do they call it that? Is that a some
There's
hot
actually
springs?
A bath there, you know, like the hot springs and stuff. It's owned by one person. The only thing we have is a post office.
How long have you lived there?
12 years.
Where'd you live before that?
Scottsdale.
Why am I thinking of somewhere else?
At one time I had 5 houses. Now I only have 2.
Yeah, but like it seemed like a while ago you were showing me a house. I'm like, dude, that looks like a quaint little house, like a town in a like a small community. And I thought Connecticut.
No, I've never been in Connecticut. I used to live in Scottsdale.
Oh, how'd you like that, by the way?
Scottsdale. I love living in Scottsdale.
Because I might think about getting a spot down there.
It's a great place to live.
I got to get the kids out of Vegas, I would say. My wife wants to move them out of Vegas, but Nashville's cool, but...
Yeah, I like Nashville too, but...
Unless you like country music and drinking,
yeah.
What do you do there?
I don't know. I mean, I haven't been to Nashville. I did square dance on the Grand Ole Opry when I was 12, just so you know. And I am related to Roy Acuff, though I don't know how, but I know that he invited my family to his family reunion, and my father wouldn't go because the interstate wasn't done. And so, and then when I was in college, I went to the Grand Ole Opry, and I met him backstage because we were there to get the hell beat out of us by Vanderbilt.
Wow. So let's get back to this. Sure. Otherwise, I'm going to start asking about politics. I was about to ask you about your opinion on a few things, but I'm like, nah, let's stick to this. So out of curiosity, you said there's 8 weeks because there's 8 things they got to learn. What are those 8 things someone should learn?
Well, the first one is creating the right culture. If you don't get culture right, nothing else matters. And,
Fact. That's what I've been struggling with for 20 some years.
Yeah. Listen,
I get the culture right, I fuck it up.
Well, you got to spend a lot of time on thinking about what do you do to make culture. And in my mind, you have to be an empathetic CEO that really gives a shit about
There's
your employees.
There's my problem. Did you say empathetic?
Yeah.
I'm just pathetic.
Brad, I know you better than that. You're not pathetic.
I don't have the imp down.
Well, but I think a lot about what can I do to make our employees happy. I'll give you an example. Right this morning, I got a call, and we've got an employee who we think is underpaid. My suggestion was to give her, a significant raise. And so the president of the company who works for me, he gives me a number, and I said, that's too low. I want her to know we really like her work because she's unbelievably great. Now she's doing stuff that we actually didn't hire for, but she's doing it exceptional, and we need people to do what she does exceptional. So, just a simple example. I had somebody call me one day and they said, we have a 401k. And you can't access it until you've been with the company 18 months. And so we had just hired a new employee, and he wondered, why do I have to wait 18 months? So somebody called me, and I called my financial planner, who lives in Scottsdale, by the way. And if you ever go there, I'll get you to meet him. He's terrific. But I called him, and I said, John, who was the idiot that made this policy? He said, well, that idiot would be you. I said, really? I said, well, why can we change it? He said, yeah, we can change it. I said, well, he said, what do you want to change it to? I said, I wanted to change it within 90 days. They can actually start, putting money in the thing. So that's what we did. We had another time where they called me and said, we don't have braces covered for our children. And it's not in our dental thing. So I called my admin and I said, okay, how much does it cost to get braces? And the answer is 50. What is the benefit? It's $1,500 one time. And I said, okay, we don't have that many people that have young kids. I said, well, just tell everybody to expense it. And but expensive for 2 years, not 1 year, because most people don't get the braces for just 1 year. And so when you do things like that, to me, you're creating a culture where you're screaming that I really care about you, because I will immediately make changes that I think are beneficial to you. They may cost me money, but that's not why we're in business. I mean, you know, we're in business to be successful, and if we're successful, we'll make money. And you won't be successful if you don't have the right culture.
Indeed. And so you're going to spend a week on that. What's week two? What's week two?
Implementing peak performance planning. I mean, it's like anything else. If you're going to be successful, you better figure out, how do I become a peak performer? So how, what planning do I need to do? And if you're a sales leader, a lot of that is dependent on what is the relationship that you have with your people? What's their level of excellence or lack of excellence? How long have they been there? What's happening to them? What's going on with their family? A lot of it is just, how do you actually think about, what do I need to do to create this culture that enables these people to understand this is how you plan for peak performance? You can't hit a target you don't have. And the vast majority of people aim at nothing. And if you aim at nothing, you're bound to hit it. What I want people to do is to say, okay, what do you plan to do? Now, the second thing I want to do is I want to make sure that these people understand what their expectations are, not in terms of activity, but in terms of their achievements. I want people to get the mental acuity to understand, how do you think about what you need to do in order to be a peak performer? You can't be a peak performer if you don't think like a peak performer. You'll never be a peak performer if you don't think that way. So it's a lot of it is about mindset.
Week three.
Week three is conducting targeted sales training workshops. And so in this one, we focus on three or four things. One is we focus on planning, because you got to plan. And yes, you have to plan throughout any interaction, whether it's short or long, because stuff happens that you have to be prepared for, you know, whenever you encounter, you know, a customer or prospect. The second thing is, how do you open the call so that the person wants to listen to what you have to say? And I will tell you, the vast majority of salespeople suck at that. We teach people the concept of mystery, surprise, and curiosity, which we stole from Chip and Dan Heath, terrific book, Made to Stick. Brendan Kane says it a slightly different way, but I like the way he says it. He says, pattern interruption that makes me want to learn more. If you sound like every other rep, regardless of what industry you're in, they will not want to hear you talk. So in my mind, what I usually do is I usually say to myself, okay, what percentage of sales are made the first time you call on somebody? That number's really low. It's usually five or greater that you actually close the sale. Well, if that's the case, here's what I also know. I cannot change what you think if I don't know what you think. So to me, I'm going to plan for, what am I going to ask you so I can get you to want to listen to what I have to say? So like when I was, you know, my own, you know, as a manager for 8 years, the number one district in the country for, we had 55 districts, and I was number one 7 out of 8 years. Year I wasn't number one, I was number two. But I'd go into a customer's office and I say, can we do something different today? Now, when I say, can we do something different today? What do you think happens to curiosity? Curiosity goes up because they wonder, what the hell are you going to do? And I'm going to say, well, what I'd like to do today is something different. I don't want to sell you anything. Now, the reason I say that is I'm trying to reduce what?
Friction.
Exactly. Because I know that if I can simply find out what you think today, the next time I come, I got a damn good chance of figuring out why I can make a case that you ought to be thinking about my product a little more often.
And so, you know one I used to use?
What?
You don't have to buy today, do you?
I love that.
They say, no, why? Oh, just making sure.
Yeah.
But what good. We got some time to get to know one another.
Yes, exactly. I mean,
they get their defenses to come down.
Yeah. I mean, what you got to do is reduce sales resistance. And the sales resistance is there. I read an article years ago about, you know, if you want to exchange information with another person, two things need to be true. And this guy was a technology guy. And so I read the thing, and he said two things that I thought were brilliant. He said, if you're going to exchange information with another person, and I would submit to you that that means you and I are trying to sell somebody something. He said, two things need to be true. Number one, the person has to believe that you're not biased. Now, when I'm teaching this stuff, whether it's to a large audience or whether it's to 10 people, I always say, so let me ask you this. What percentage of the people that you call on believe that you're not biased? Is that a big number or small number?
Well, they don't believe that you're not biased.
Exactly. It's almost 100%. I said, so you, if you really want to sell them, then you can't sound biased. So if somebody says, well, what about this other product? I say, well, look, it's a great product. That, then I'm going to pivot and say, that's not the question. The question are, what are the attributes of our product that have benefit over the things that you're currently thinking about? So I'm not going to bash the other product. What I'm going to do is I'm going to pivot and say, what are the differences and when do they matter? And so the next thing we're going to teach people is, so I want to get you to listen. Then I'm going to start asking you questions, because if I don't know what you think, can't change what you think. So I'm going to come prepared to say, look, I'd like to pick your brain today because I want to know how customers like you. I never say how you, I say like you make these decisions when you got so many options. And it's amazing. You watch these people, they'll sit back and they genuinely feel like you want their opinion. And I do. I want to know how you think so I can say the next time I come, hey, last time I was here, I think we had this conversation. You said this. And I got to thinking about this. And I said to myself, you know, I think there's something that maybe we haven't touched on that you might be interested in. Want to hear it? So I'm always trying to figure out, how do you create that curiosity? And so once you get through the discovery, then you got to figure out, what is your pitch? How are you going to distinguish your offering from somebody else's offering? And oftentimes, the differences don't have to be large. They just need to be real. But I have to know, how do I actually position those things? Now, what I do for a living is I help people teach. I mean, I teach people, how do you actually make that difference matter? Because they don't always matter, but if they do matter, it does work to know, how do you position it to get the customer to think about your product more often? My bias has always been, if I can get you to think about it more often, I can get you to do it more often, but I got to get you to think about it first. And then the next thing I'm going to do is to figure out, okay, well, how do I actually make my case for this? And then after that, I'm going to have to worry about objections and how do you close, but those come in a later chapter. But we're going to teach people, how do you create a workshop that actually enables you to get somebody to want to listen? How do you create a workshop that actually gets somebody to know, how do you start the conversation? How do you ask the questions in the discovery phase? And they're not hard to do, but you have to use words like, how do people like you typically? Typically is one of my favorite words. Typically and ordinarily are very underused in selling. When you say typically, I almost always have to answer. I use phrases like, if you had to guess, about how many times would this happen to you in the next month? Now, if you don't say, if you had to guess, the customer is likely to say, it depends, or I don't know. And those are either of those are lousy answers. But if you say, if you had to guess, every single time they'll say, well, probably this or that. Well, that's all I want to know. I want to get some directional understanding of what they're doing and how often this happens to find out, hey, is this a decent prospect for me? And how am I going to make my case? So that's how we do in the third section.
Well, that sounds like a deep section.
It is.
What's fourth?
The fourth is installing accountability tracking. So, you know, and this is one of the things that we find with a lot of our clients is that there's not much accountability for what you actually want people to do. So there's a clarity on the front end. I'm going, this is what I need you to do. And I'll give you a simple example. One of the things that I believe, and I may be the only person in America that believes this, but I think if you're going to be wildly successful in selling, you need to ask your customer for the opportunity to have a conversation. And I can tell you, the times that I hear the word conversation in a sales call that I'm witnessing is virtually zero. But if I say, you know, I'd like
it's to- funny that you say that, because you know what my first step is in my proprietary sales path?
What is it?
First step, have a conversation.
Oh, I'm shocked that you and I think just alike, Brad.
Well, because in my book, you know, you can complicate the shit out of it. I don't like giving people word tracks, even though I can. I like giving people methodology, meaning, what are you doing? Well, in the very beginning, you're having a conversation with the individual, so right. You can find common ground. You can build a little, you know, mutual, you know, rapport. But more importantly, I want to find a label on you, a label of like, you know, whatever it is I'm selling, I want to find a label that you're willing to put on, meaning, you know, let's use Lightspeed as an example. Well, if you're not making $100,000 a month or more selling your courses online, why not?
Mm-hmm.
Why aren't you? That, well, you know, I don't have the right team. I don't have the, I don't know the marketing. I don't know. There's going to be a reason.
Yeah.
Why can't you? Oh, well, you know, I don't do it. Oh, coincidentally, I'm going to use that later because that's what we're selling basically.
Right.
So the having a conversation part is really the beginning of it all. And I can also qualify you.
Yeah.
The other day I was listening to one of my sales guys. I walk in. I said, what step are you on? He said, and I'm, as he's talking to this customer, first of all, step four is plant doubt. We're not, he ain't planting doubt. Okay. He's educating the guy on how to do something, which technically he wasn't even right. So he's educating the guy, thinking it's step four, totally wrong. And again, my fault, I trained him. When in reality, I couldn't bear it any longer. So I jumped in the call. And so what did I do? I started at step one. I had a conversation. I found out within 5 minutes, the dude's driving DoorDash to make ends meet. And I said, well, bro, listen, I can show you how to make a bunch of money online, but I can't show you how to do it broke. I've never done that. And I don't want your money if, number one, you don't have it. Number two, it ain't going to work. Like, I'd rather you keep your money and not do business with me if I don't think it'll work. So I can't show you how to do this broke. But if I could show you how to do this and it costs you $30,000, would you be able to come up with that? He goes, not right now, man. I'm driving DoorDash to make some money. I said, okay, dude, that's a lot of people in that position. And I respect it. But if you win the lottery, something changes, feel free to call us back.
Yeah.
And they're like, what was that? Well, you can call that qualifying. Because if you don't have the money, why am I going to sit there and talk to you for 2 hours? Is that rude of people to believe? You think salesmen should qualify people?
Absolutely. Well, let me tell you why. Because I think you're hitting on a huge point. You can teach anybody to sell. I can teach anybody to sell. The reality is, but I can't teach you to figure out whether this person is actually going to buy or not. And if you don't learn how to do that, you can be the best salesperson in the world and you can make all the calls you want and you ain't going to succeed. You better be calling on people that are legitimate prospects for what you're doing. And you better have some way to ascertain whether they are, just like you just did, in terms of qualifying that person.
It's just common sense.
Yeah. And it's also the best thing for the other person, because you shouldn't lead them down a path where they think they got a shot at doing something where they have no shot at all.
Not only that, I mean, to a salesman, time is money.
Yes. Man, when I was a manager, I used to tell all my reps, I said, look, let me tell you this. I said, I want you to put down at the beginning of the year the 10 customers that are going to change your life. And when I'm with you, those are the only people I want to see. Now, I did that for two reasons. Number one, I wanted to find out, do they know how to prospect for people that are actually give us business, or are they calling on people that are a waste of time? The other thing is that if they were calling on the right people, I wanted to build my own relationship with that customer, because I know that my people got promoted. I hired 20 people in 8 years and 13 of them got promoted. So I constantly had to, you know, retrain people.
We should make a course on that.
Huh?
Prospecting for gold.
Yeah.
Well, that's, you know how many people are out there prospecting for lumps of shit?
Yeah. But
they'll spend all day long trying to find prospects, and the prospects are fucking turds.
That's in the eighth course, by the way.
So, oh, okay.
Like, you got ahead of me, Brad.
All right. So that was four.
Yeah. The next one is coaching with feedback. I mean,
feedback. That's my favorite F word.
It's not mine, but I like it. I mean, the reality is you have to give people feedback that help them get better. And a lot of people don't do that, and they don't know how to do it. They don't know how to use the right language. They just, you know, and they don't know.
I'm guilty of this.
Pardon?
I'm guilty of this. Well, I need that course. I give feedback, but it's not effective. Why? Because I don't think what I'm saying is resonating. Like, I'll walk up and be like, dude, are you fucking stupid? That ain't how you do it.
Well,
but that's feedback, isn't it?
It is feedback, absolutely. But I mean, I usually say that this is how I do it. And this is, and I'm not the smartest guy in America, you know that. But I usually say to somebody who's not performing, I say, look, here's what bothers me about you. I'm going to be as candid as I can possibly be. This is your performance. This is your potential. Now, you need to tell me why this gap exists, because this ain't my issue, it's yours. And it's amazing how people become self-aware. But the key to all growth and development is self-awareness, getting people to be aware of what they're, you know. Now, if you read any of Willingham's books, I mean, he wrote a book called The People Principle. And the thing I love about that book is chapter 5. And I tell everybody, if you're a leader, you should read chapter 5 because it's on the three dimensions of human performance. And when you get people to understand that there's more potential in them than they realize. The reality is, psychologically, I've been told that it's hard for people to get out of their own way, their own experiences. And so if you don't have somebody that you like, trust, respect, and admire that can tell you that there is this gap and that you need to figure out how you do something about it. And I will tell you, it happened to me twice. And in both times, it was a gigantic lesson for me. One is, when I was 37, my ceiling in my mind was that I would be a regional manager. I lost a contest for being a regional manager because this guy was been with us 10 years longer than I had, and I'd beat his butt every year for the last 5 years, but he got the job. And he calls me that day that he got the job, and he says, "Hey, I'm coming to have you. I need to talk to you tonight. I'm going to fly up there and see you." He lived in Tampa, still does. And he met me in Birmingham, and he meets me. I said, "Well, what time do you want us to meet you? Your wife's not invited. This is me and you." So he comes up. Now, I'm his number one performer. I'm the number one performer in the company. And he comes to me, and he said, "Look, I came to tell you two things. First thing I came to tell you is that you should have got this job, not me." He said, "You're far more qualified to do this than I am." He said, "But Jerry, this job's not big enough for you." He said, "I'm going to tell you right now, I will not stop advocating on your behalf until you're running our company." And that's the first time in my life I had ever thought that broadly. I personally couldn't get out of my own experience because I had a challenging childhood. And so my ceiling was low. But he convinced me that I could actually run the company. 4 years later, I was running the company. And then I had another one, you know, 4 or 5 years later, exactly the same kind of thing, but it was about, you know, my income. And he said, "You know, You need to be making way more money than that. All the value you're taking to companies, got to be kidding me." So my point is, but there were people that I liked, trusted, respected, and admired telling me that you got more in the tank, man, than you can use. And I think if people understand that, it's called the three dimensions of human performance, then you can really help people get better. But you also have to be very specific about the things that you want them to do. So you take this sales approach where, how good are you at creating conversations? How good are you at actually getting the customer to want to listen to what you have to say? How good are you at creating this conversation? How good are you at actually, you know, talking about the product? And what did you do that demonstrated to me that you ask enough questions, you ask the right questions? Those are the kinds of things that we actually focus on in that part of the thing.
Good ones. I need that one. Myself. Because, dude, if you don't do it right, it's not effective.
That's right.
Now, keep in mind, because as I'm listening to this, I'm all listening like I'm a sales guy because I'm a sales guy.
Right.
But in reality, like, this isn't for sales guys, even though it could be.
Yeah.
It's for people that need to train and lead sales guys.
Right. Or they don't know enough to be able to do it themselves, but they can outsource it to this program and they'll get great results.
What's the next one?
The next one is teaching the manager how to model excellence.
Now, is that week 7 we're on?
No, that's week 6.
Week 6.
Teach the manager how to model excellence. It's amazing to me the number of salespeople who get promoted that were good salespeople, but they're not very good managers. And there is a huge difference between teaching selling and doing selling. And so what we do is teach people, how do you teach people to actually become excellent? And the only way you do that is you actually have to be able to model it. You have to be able to show them. Sitting in the car with them, working with them all day, letting them make all the calls is stupid. You need to make every other call. Not because you're great. Not because you're great. But they learn more by watching you than they do by you evaluating them and then telling them how they screwed it up in the call. Because they can't remember half of what they did in the call. And so in my mind, I want to be able to show them what excellence looks like. And I don't mind screwing it up either.
Well, what if I'm not excellent?
You mean as a manager?
Yeah.
Then you need this program. Huh? Period. You need it just for that. if you're not excellent.
Well, but it's not a sales program. It's a sales leadership program.
No, but I want the. But I think the leadership has to know how to teach selling in order to be able to coach them.
Well, sure, but showing them what excellent looks like means I have to be an excellent salesperson.
Bingo.
So you're going to teach me how to do that?
Yeah, damn right.
It sounded like week four had a little bit of that in there.
Did.
How am I going to be an expert all of a sudden?
Well, you're not going to be an expert all of a sudden because we're going to give you things that you can do to make yourself better.
Yeah, well, again, that sounds like a stretch. That one. Why? Well, because, dude, there's a lot of business owners. They're not very good salespeople.
I know, and that's why they need us.
But I can still show them what excellence looks like without me being excellent. I just have to find someone who is excellent. As long as I show them what's excellent.
Yeah, exactly.
Because if I'm listening to this and I heard you tell me I got to make every other call myself, I'm a butt puckers. Why? Well, I don't know what I'm doing. Well, dude, you got someone on the team that knows what they're doing.
Exactly.
Point is, you got to show them excellence.
Exactly.
You got to show them what is correct.
Well, but also think that in almost all teams, not all, but almost all teams, there are two or three people that are excellent. And if you're not using those people to teach excellence, and sometimes it's excellence in one part of the sales, you know, call, or it's another part like a closer or whatever. But a lot of these people, as good as they are, still need what I call tiny tweaks. We work with top sales people all the time. And whenever we do any of our projects, we always say, I want to talk to your best people. Because your best people are the ones who are going to give me the ideas to build on that enable me to tell you what does excellence look like. And when I did this the very first time 22 years ago, all I did was work with the best reps, and then I just sort of put together what I thought excellence looked like in terms of each one of these parts of the sales call, and then I added what I believed, which is probably 20% more than what I learned. So you have to absolutely have, if you can't do it, you need to know who can do it, and if they can do it, then you got to outsource it to them. And there's a lot of excellent salespeople in this world.
Well, best case scenario is learn as you go, so eventually are the expert.
And the reality is, and this is how I learned. I mean, I learned in the first 3 or 4 or 5 years that if I was watching these really great salespeople, it was easy for me to learn. All I was doing was taking what the really good people were doing and making sure everybody else knows this is what excellence looks like.
And that's on week seven?
That's six.
That's still six?
Yep. Next one is perfecting objections and handling objections and asking for commitments.
There's gold in that week.
Well, I think so. I think you've probably read the same books I have, but one of the things I learned a long time ago was a guy said that when everybody gives you an objection, the first thing you should do is say, in addition to that, is there anything else that's keeping you from thinking about this product differently? And the reality is, and when you're talking about objections, first thing is, one, there's lots of misconceptions, right? So, for example, I remember talking to a physician one time and I asked him a question. I said, what do you think about this product? He said, well, it's just this. And I said, well, what if that weren't the case? It didn't. And I said, why don't you let me tell you what I know, and then you tell me whether you still feel that way. So I told him what I know. He said, well, that's not what I thought it was. And I said, well, does that change your mind? He said, yeah, it does change my mind. So sometimes it's simply trying to draw out what are the real issues. Because oftentimes, I mean, the statistics say that the average interchange, the reality is people only reveal about 30% of what they're thinking. And so if you're not a really good listener, and if you're not asking what I call extender questions about how do you say, can you say more about that? Talk to me a little bit more. How'd you come to that conclusion? Then you're not ever going to find out what the real issues are. So you got to find out what the real issue is before you start trying to tackle the issue. And then in terms of closing, I try and do a lot of mirroring. So I say, look, I get the sense, and if I'm wrong, tell me, I get the sense that you really can think about this product a little bit more often. Am I right about that? And if they say yes, then I'm going to say, okay, if you think that, that you actually could have a different perspective of this thing, is it fair for me to ask you to think about trying it? Let's say over the next 4 or 5 weeks. Now, if you get a yes, there's only two answers you get to that question. You get yes or yes, but. Yes, but is fundamentally no. But if I can find out what the objection is, then I can. I'm not really worried about making the sale today. I'll make it the next time I come. But if I can get the person to say no, I'm bought in, man. I think I should be thinking about this more often. Then I'm going to say, well, if you think you can, you know, that you ought to be thinking about this more often, here's what I'm going to ask you to do. If you had to guess, about how many of these situations would you encounter in the next 2 weeks? Let's say they say 15. And I'm going to say, well, here's what I'm going to ask you to do. If you're going to see 15 of these situations, I'm going to ask you not to give it to 15 people. Now, that'll shock the hell out of them. Because what we know is that when you ask for a little, you get a lot. When you ask for a lot, you get a little. And so I'm going to say, here's what I'm going to ask you to do. Don't give it to 15. Just give it to 4 or 5. Can I ask you to do that? And they say, yes. I say, okay, if you're going to commit to me that you're actually going to give this a fair trial over the next, 2 or 3 weeks, then here's what I promise you I'm going to do. And then I'm going to make a promise on top of their promise. Now, those two things, one, this concept of asking for a little, you get a lot, is powerful. The other one is when you actually make a promise on top of theirs, you increase the likelihood that they'll actually do what you ask them to do by 30-40%.
You got some stats, don't you? Old Jerry's got some stats.
Hey, listen, I tell you what happened to me. I was a rep for 6 years, and I was really good. I wasn't great. I was really good. And I remember, Brad, I was living in Charlottesville, Virginia, and I was driving to Birmingham, and I picked up the district was last in the country. They gave me an opportunity to take the best one in the country or the worst. And I took the worst. And the guy was VP of sales and marketing said, why are you taking that? Why don't you want to go to this one? I said, because if I go there and I succeed, you'll never believe it's me. I said, if I go to Birmingham and succeed, you know damn well it's me. And so I'm driving to Birmingham and I have this conversation with myself. I know how to sell. I don't know how to teach it. So I went to the bookstore and I bought a book called Winning Strategies in Selling by Roger Staubach and Jack and Gary Kinder. I bought it for one reason. Staubach played football and I played football in college. So I bought the book. The book's not great. Mine's better. But he said something in there. He quoted a guy named Charlie Tremendous Jones. And he said this. He says, chances are you'll be the same person 5 years from today that you are today, with the exception of two things. The people you meet and the books you read. And the person who won't read is truly no better off than the person who can't read. And I remember saying to myself, oh, my God, I've been out of college for 10 years. I read Jaws. I read QB7 by Leon Uris. In anticipation of moving to New Jersey, I read The Godfather. So 3 in 10 years, right? Since then, I've read 640 business books. I read one book 93 times.
Which one's that? Psycho-Cybernetics?
Yes, Psycho-Cybernetics. Now, I will tell you, this is Jerry's bias, I think Weldon's book is better than Psycho-Cybernetics. His book, The Power of Consistency, it's the same basic concepts, but it's so much easier to understand.
Dang. Old Weldon Long.
I love Weldon.
You guys better look up old Weldon Long.
No, Weldon
ain't gonna be long before you find out who he is.
I hope you find out who he is and his power of consistency. When somebody says, if you recommend one book because you're so well read, what would you recommend? I would say Weldon's book, The Power of Consistency. You master that, you can master almost anything.
Dang.
So that's fundamentally what we do in this part, is to basically teach people how do you actually get people to draw out what their real issues are, and then how do you ask them for commitments where they either don't say no or they say it depends. If they say it depends, then I simply say, well, what does it depend on? I'll find out what the objections are. I'll deal with them the next time I come. But sometimes I say to some customers, I say, is it okay if I argue with you? And they go, yeah, you can argue with me. And I say, well, here's why I think what you said is probably a little bit off than what I'm thinking. Is it okay if I tell you what I think the differences are?
And they usually say, please do.
Yeah, exactly.
They invite you to tell them why they're stupid. Yeah.
It's what I learned from Bradley.
It's a good one. Then the eighth week, put the cap on the deal.
The eighth week is prospecting by relationship building. The vast majority of people do not know how to ask for a referral. And we teach people, how do you ask for a referral and how do you meet people? So I'll give you an example. I wanted to meet a basketball coach in Scottsdale when I lived there. And so I asked and I just moved there. But I asked 10 people. I said, how well do you know Herb Sendek, if at all? Now, Herb was the basketball coach at Arizona State, and he's the fourth youngest coach in the history of college basketball to 400 victories. He's one of the only two coaches who've been coach of the year in three different conferences. And I am a basketball junkie. I love college basketball. This was the only close basketball thing. So I asked 10 people. The 10th person I asked was a guy named David Rich. And David, I said, how well do you know Herb Sendek, if at all? And that's how you ask that question. You don't say, do you know, sir? You say, how well do you know Herb Sendek, if at all? And I had nine no's. The 10th one, he said, I know him really well. Now, here's the next question. Got to ask it this way. How comfortable would you be introducing me? You don't say, would you introduce me? Because then you're putting them on the spot. How comfortable? Now, they only say two things. Well, he's weird. They'll make up an excuse why they can't recommend you. Or he'll say, no, I got a great relationship with him. So he said, you want to have breakfast with him next week? I'd love to. Now, this was 17 years ago. And so I go there. And now, when you go there, you better have a reason why you want to talk to the guy. Right? So anyway, I go to talk to him, and we have a common acquaintance, the guy who coached at my college. And everybody knew my guy because my guy led the nation in scoring for like 5 or 6 out of 10 years. So we talked about that. And then at the end, he said, well, what do you want from me? And that they are going to ask you that if you get that kind of a meeting. And I said, well, I really don't want anything. I said, your T-shirts are ugly. I don't want them. I have no interest in your tickets because I got enough money. I can pay my own for tickets. I said, but let me tell you what I would love to for you to think about. I said, how many people do you have in that locker room? He said, 15. I said, how many of those are going to be able to make their living playing basketball and never have to get a job? He said, none of them. I said, well, if you want me to teach them how to build relationships so they can get a job, then I can do that for you. And he said, well, can you do it tomorrow? And I said, you damn right I can. And then as he was walking away, I said, Herb, I got one more question for you. What is it? I said, do you think that recruiting is selling? He said, yeah. And I said, well, if you do that, I'll teach your coaches how to recruit. And so I did. And he's become one of my favorite friends in the entire world. And we talk a lot. And he asked me questions. And he uses me as a mentor-like person. He was the valedictorian at Carnegie Mellon. I mean, he's wicked smart. But my point is, if you ask the right questions, you actually can get people to not only give you a referral, but they'll move you up the what I call the relationship pyramid to a point that you would not be if you had not asked that question. Because if somebody says, do you know Brad Lee? I say, yes. How comfortable would you be introducing me? Well, that depends on how much I think of them. And if I think enough of them that I'm not going to embarrass you, then I'd call you and say, hey, I got somebody I want you to meet. But if I don't think that, I'll say, I do know Brad, but I wouldn't recommend.
You'd say he's weird.
I would say he's weird, yeah. But so it's really about how do you learn? So you can go into a building and say you want to meet somebody. You want to meet somebody that's hard to see. Okay, well, so let's say it's a CEO. So you say, you know, I'm looking for anybody who might have a relationship with somebody who's the CEO of XYZ company. Do you know anybody like that? And if you ask that question enough, you're going to find somebody that says yes. But what happens is we don't ask those questions, right? We get out a book or we get out some sort of resource where, you know, that we bought online that tells us who the COO is of this company. And that ain't the way to go about it. You need somebody else to introduce you, because when you get them to introduce you, you have moved up the relationship pyramid and you start in the middle, not at the end.
Now, when I graduate, do I get some sort of certificate?
For you? Of course.
No, I mean, people.
No, I haven't thought about that. I'm not that far in.
You should give him a certificate.
Well,
the Herb Sendek trophy.
Hey, Herb is one of the most wonderful people. He's at University of Santa Clara now. In his last 2 years, he's got a first-round draft choice. He's a great person.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, he's a wonderful guy. You ought to meet him. He's a wonderful human being.
How well do you know him?
Real well.
How comfortable would you be introducing
Damn
him?
Damn comfortable.
When can we get that done?
Huh? Whenever you want.
But you said something key.
What?
I should know what I want before I meet him.
Yes.
I don't know what the fuck I want from Herb.
Huh?
What do I want from Herb?
you don't need anything from her, but he's somebody that needs to know you, and you would probably benefit from knowing him.
Is it Sendek or Sundek?
S-E-N-D-E-K.
Sendek.
But I mean, he calls me and asks me, you know, all kinds of questions. They're all leadership questions. And I mentor another guy. And I did that. When I did a little bit differently. Somebody proactively introduced me to him because he knew that I was working with her.
Well, you've been working with a lot of big name people that you didn't even mention. So again, everybody listening needs to understand, old Jerry Acuff's got some contacts. And he said, if he knows you or he knows somebody that knows you, he'll help you.
I will.
You answer your DMs or no?
I answer any text message from anybody that asks me for help. If I know them.
Yeah, but that's not, no one has your cell phone, Jerry.
Pardon? All you got to do is go to jerryacuff.com. My cell phone number's there.
Damn, you'll take text messages from anybody?
Yep.
Bomb squad, go blow up his damn cell phone and make him regret that.
I'm not going to regret it. I'm a big believer that the laws of the universe say when you give, you get. Somebody asks me for help, I give it to him.
Dude, your phone might blow up where you might regret it for once.
Well, I got people who work for me that I can turf that to if it becomes that momentous.
Well, I had a guy here one time, and he said he gave out a cell phone, and I said, "Damn, dude, you're giving your cell phone?" He was an addict, and he wanted to help anyone who was an addict. And I didn't think that many addicts were following me,
right?
But apparently, I got some druggies following me because his phone blew up. They were alcoholics, all kinds of addiction problems, and his phone blew up. And he called me, and he goes, "Damn, dog." I said, "What?" He goes, "Dude, you're right about the cell phone." Because I said, "Dude, you're going to get a lot of calls." But, I don't know how many business owners follow me. I would imagine quite a few. There's an entrepreneurial podcast.
Right.
Talking about business success. Life, business, and sales is really what I think this is all about.
I do too. Yeah.
And I'm glad you came today, Jerry. I haven't seen you in a while.
I know. I've missed you, Brad.
Dude, you've been running around. You freaking had a health scare.
I did. Brain surgery. My college roommate.
Didn't get you.
No, my college roommate says to me, we were in our reunion at VMI, and he said, he found out I had brain surgery. He said, "Hey, Cuff, let me ask you a question." I said, "What, Tommy?" He said, "Did they find a brain?" And I said, "Yeah, they found a brain." He said, "Well, hell, when you live with me, you didn't have a brain." So I just want to make sure you still got one.
You do, but you had a health scare. Came through that just fine. Everybody out there, were they a little worried at all or no?
No.
Everybody knows.
Now, listen, I tell you, I bet you I've talked to 26,000 doctors in my lifetime because we spent a lot of time in that field. The guy that operated on me went to the University of Washington, and he went to medical school at Duke, and then he went to Medical University of South Carolina. And of all the physicians I've met in all my 40 years in this business, I have never met anybody I like more than this guy.
Really?
His name is Ryan Kellogg.
Not even Herb Sendek.
Herb is not a doctor. Herb is a coach.
Oh, you mean out of doctors?
No, out of all the 26,000, he's the most wonderful doctor I've ever met. And he's so down to earth. I asked him, I said, "What made you want to be a surgeon?" "I like working with my hands." I said, "Well, hell, you could have been a carpenter." I mean, but he was so... his bedside manner was absolutely perfect. He would stay as long as, you had questions for him. He would tell you things, prophylactically. He's the best doctor I've ever talked to.
Well, you'd think he'd need to be with that kind of surgery because, dude, I'd be scared if I was going in for brain surgery.
I didn't have time to be scared. I had really bad headaches. And, at my time, you could have hit me in the head with a sledgehammer and I'd have been fine because it was killing me. And, but he came in and said, "Look, I'm going to do two surgeries on you in the morning." And, and so Marianne asked him, "How problematic is it?" He said, "It's problematic, but I've never had a problem and I've done hundreds of these." So I said, "We'll get to work."
Damn. Well, we're glad you came through.
Me too.
Glad you came through the show too. Folks, if you guys ain't following Jerry, go follow him at jerry.acuff, A-C-U-F-F. Go to jerryacuff.com. Go pick up his books. But more importantly, dude, his new 8-week program. How do they get that? Just go to your website?
Well, the easiest thing to do is probably reach out to me on my cell, 480-296-9972.
Thanks. So he's giving that sumbitch out again.
Hey, listen.
Somebody, dude, go, you guys blow him up, even if you ain't interested.
If they blow him up, then you know what's going to happen? What? Tony Capullo is going to be taking these calls.
Tony Capullo, if you guys don't remember him, go back a few episodes. He's the fool wearing New Balance. Tony Capullo. And blow his ass up just for putting his cell phone out there. Like, just blow his, tell him you love him. What's the accent from?
Born and raised in Memphis, Tennessee.
Memphis, Tennessee. That's where it's coming from. That's why I said, where do you live? Because, like, where'd you say you lived?
I live in Rock, near Lexington, Virginia. But we live in a little town called Rock Ridge.
That in Virginia.
Pardon?
They don't sound like that.
No, you should hear my wife, though.
What's she sound like?
She sounds like she's from New Jersey.
Well, is there a Virginia accent?
No, it's not much different than any other Southern accent. It's probably less of a drawl, but
yeah, because Virginia's up here, isn't it?
Well, it's just above North Carolina.
Yeah, that's up here.
Yeah, well.
You're not from the South, fool.
Well, I was born and raised in Memphis. I went to high school in Cocoa Beach, Florida. And then I made All-State in football, and I wound up going to VMI on a football scholarship.
Well, that's where the accents come from.
Yeah.
Well, Jerry, you're welcome back any old time.
Right. You're welcome at my house anytime.
Hey, by the way, folks, if you guys are salespeople and you don't have business, you're looking for sales coaching. That's what Jerry really specialized in most of his life. And here's what's crazy. He specialized in the shit for introverts as well.
That's right.
So a lot of introverts think, I'm not good at sales. Jerry helps them turn into freaking kick-ass salespeople. Some of the best salespeople that you've worked with are introverts. So if you guys are out there and you're an introvert and you want to make big money, I'd get a hold of them and ask about a sales training, which has nothing to do with that 8-week thing. But the sales training is what's going to get people successful. I keep telling people, listen, I can show you how to make a couple hundred grand a year, but you're going to have to sell something.
Yeah.
And then they're like, well, you know, I'm not very good at sales. Well, then fucking get good.
Right.
But at the end of the day, dude, if you're not making $200,000-$300,000 a year, it's your own damn fault. Yeah. And that's the truth. And anyone can do it.
Yeah.
Introverts, not good at sales, you know, don't like talking to people. Get a hold of Jerry. He literally built a career teaching people, teaching what I call scared bitches, how to get out of their own fucking way and turn into badasses. Right?
Yeah. That's 100% true.
All right, then. Folks, as always, till next time, keep it real.